Following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome once again to the second snow edition of A Game from the Radio.
The weather outside is frightful.
Yeah,
which is, you know, is what's awesome is that there's the parking lot behind the radio station is like a wilderness. There's like all kinds of wild creatures out there, yeah. And there's, you know, high tall weed and a giant. I'm certain cancer-causing tower of broadcast, yeah. Which we'll find out like 20 years from now.
Yes, my child would have a third eye.
Yeah, they are diligent about plowing that back.
Oh, my God. That's what I that figured I was going to have to park somewhere else. But I was like, ooh, look at this.
You had to hit your hydrofoils on to slide in, but it did not happen.
Kudos to WGBB staff.
Yes, nicely done. That poor one guy who was out there.
You think it was a guy? It was one guy with a shovel?
One guy with a shovel. Hey, if the research department is what it is, it's one guy with a shovel.
And he started 2 weeks ago.
So if anybody's having learning trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on a live audio streaming.
Hey,
also on
live
the
audio streaming.
We have the live in-studio webcam, which you actually can see right now.
Whatever. I'm not looking at the webcam anymore.
Me neither. I protest at that.
I'm waiting.
It's radio, not TV. Darn it. Darn it.
And the phone number here is area code 61-888-881. Oh, I forgot to do the introductions. I will be Mark Torres.
Hey, Mark.
Hassan Godwin sitting right
there. Hey, Hassan.
And I have Charlie Saladino sitting.
Hello. Hey, Chaz.
All right, so let me just...
Chaz Saladino
to you. Can we call you Chaz? Chaz?
Yes, you can.
We won't get punched in the face for calling you Chaz.
No, Chuck you will. I hate Chuck, yeah.
That would have been the other one. I would have tried to reach for Chuck after I got Chaz.
Chaz. Chaz Tuna.
Chaz will be signing at Margaret and Christine's, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be book signing my new book, Anything You Want to Bring.
Yeah.
That's the name of the book.
Don't call me Chuck.
That's
don't call me Chuck.
Fill it in yourself. That's what the book is called.
It's Chaz to you. That's
like,
my book.
It's like 600 blank pages. It's fill it in yourself.
It's Chaz to you. That's the name of the book. Yes, and you do fill it in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sign it.
I bet you we could sell a good amount of those.
Are
I
you
bet
kidding
you we
me?
Had your face on the cover, and inside there were like blank pages, and it said fill it in yourself. And we did a big promotional run on it, and had him do signing.
Yourself. Yeah,
I bet you. I guarantee you, you'd sell more than you expected
then,
to.
Then the back cover is me, very astute, with the ascot with a pipe in my
hand. And it says about the author.
About the author.
Like
at the mirror.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
And it says about the author, and it's blank. You can fill that in too.
Fill in yourself. Use a Sharpie.
You remember they had the comics back then. They had the big gimmicky cover. Was that it was a blank cover, and you had to bring it to the artist so they can fill it in.
Yeah, play,
the original comic.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of the artist, because he was like,
I don't get paid this much. Or really, was it a polar bear fighting with a abominable snowman in the winter?
You know, in the blizzard, in the middle of a blizzard.
Yes. So let's see.
We got news.
Comic. Yeah, speaking of comics.
Speaking of comics, Mr. Segway.
Nothing.
He doesn't do that anymore.
I've been protesting that for months.
Yeah, I keep putting extras in because so go ahead.
Marvel has announced that it has promoted Axel Elizondo to editor-in-chief of Marvel Entertainment.
Lasagna, I'm so hungry.
Oh my God.
I could eat a big plate of lasagna right now.
In his new role, Axel will oversee all day-to-day aspects of Marvel Publishing Division, including advising on editorial and creative direction, developing new storylines, and brainstorming new initiatives. Mr. Joe Quesada, who is his predecessor, says
there's a Quesada
tremendous
too.
There is, right.
There's a Quesada kick.
He
Where'd you get the background music?
Yes, it's Axel Foley.
Axel Foley.
From a Billy Hill Cop.
Come on, how many people you come across named Axel?
That's true.
And has his own theme.
That's true.
I was trying to help out. Never mind. Fine.
Joe Quesada says, it's with tremendous pride that I announce Axel Alonso's promotions editor-in-chief of over a decade. Axel's been instrumental in bringing new voices to Marvel and reinventing our biggest characters like Spider-Man, X-Men, Wolverine, and so many more. He's fought creatively to make unique imprints like Marvel Max while also bringing fresh new voices to the Marvel family.
In other words, he's a corporate stooge.
So, hey, congratulations, Axel. Would you be a corporate stooge if you were editor-in-chief of Marvel?
Probably.
All right, then.
Answer for you people at home is yes.
I didn't say it was bad. He was just
telling you what it is. I got that.
All right.
Okay.
Moving along, if you guys remember, last week we had a whole show about rewriting books.
Did we?
Well, it was sort of.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Last week was 7 days ago, man.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
7 days in a snowstorm. And two snowstorms.
Yeah, two snows. So much has happened in that 7 days.
Yes,
that
two snowstorms.
Poor shovel guy. It turns out that we were right on the nose with this thing. A publisher called New South Books is releasing a new edition of Huckleberry Finn with all the racial slurs and references deleted. The rationale is that now the book won't be banned or challenged in their core and therefore can be taught in schools.
Yes.
So somebody actually went back and rewrote a book.
Let's butcher history. Yeah. And but I mean there's a great controversy to it.
Well,
to the point where it's probably not going to get as widespread a movement of I don't know what you would call that.
Rewriting.
Well,
the term for it is bolderizing. They used to do that all the time back, like in the very early 20th century, late 19th, to make books suitable for my lady's boudoir by removing anything objectionable. They called it bolderizing.
Well,
there you go.
And there you have it.
English language is so awesome. Yeah. It's just a word. If you look hard enough, there's a word for
everything.
Every atrocity that could possibly happen.
I think I'll be saying, don't bolderize me anymore. People will be going, what?
And people think you're rolling rocks down on you from some hail.
Yeah, the thing of it is the whole point of the book is it's supposed to be an indictment of racial relations at the times and slavery and the N-word, which is the word which is bolderized out of it, is supposed to be the emblematic thing of the problems that were festering.
It's the main focus of the book. If you take it out, it completely
changes it,
delegitimizes the book in and of itself. I don't like the word. Nobody likes the word, but we can't pretend that the word never existed or it was never part of part of American literature or part of American history.
Like, let's say it's a biography and the word was used and reported used as
right. Well, right. Someone was saying, yeah, when
someone
I was growing
was saying,
up,
when I was
you know,
growing
I,
up,
I either use this word or this word was used against me. And then if you take it out and replace it with some other word, people are like, well,
that
what's wrong with being called a jerk, you know?
That wasn't the word they called
jerk? You dirty jerk.
It's sort of like cutting down what you want to see. Like, if you want to see an R-rated movie and you live to see the uncut version, now all of a sudden they're giving you a G version of
it's
ridiculous.
It's all right. Everybody should get over the past, and we should get past it. We should make our peace with it, but we shouldn't try to pretend that it doesn't exist. It's ridiculous. It's utterly and it's dangerous.
We should learn from it, but it needs to be there so we can realize whether it was wrong or right thing.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be said.
I think it should still be in schools.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
By
snipping that word out of it, you're taking what was basically a devastating social commentary and just turning it into a travelogue of a trip down the Mississippi River.
Exactly. And first of all, you can't mess with Mark Twain's writing.
Yeah, that's good old Mark.
That's sacrilegious. It doesn't make any sense.
Yet?
Like, but they're idiots. You know, they're just trying to sweep everything under a rug. You know, and it's not correct. It's wrong.
From the point of view of the publishing company, they figure that there's a gold in them, their Boulderizing, and they can sell their Boulderized version to people too squeamish for the real deal.
The grand old motivation of all American industry is make more money, more money. We can get money out of this. If we just change the principles of reality, we can get some money out of it, I'm pretty sure.
Which is the intelligent version of the search for more money.
Exactly.
Amount of money it will make.
Speaking of the search for more money.
The search for more money, Mr. Segway.
For the first time, all six Star Wars films are united in one complete set.
Wow.
But to just make sure he even gets more money, he will also release two separate trilogies and two separate box sets for Blu-ray. The sets will include three additional discs with more than 30 hours of extensive special features, including never before seen deleted and alternate scenes.
When's that coming out? Stop reading. When's that coming? Just tell me when it's coming out. Just tell me when it's happening.
Expiration.
Come on, wait.
actually, it doesn't say when it's coming out. It says soon.
What kind of reporting is this?
No follow-up question.
What kind of reporting is that?
No follow-up question.
Like, how much is it going to cost? Do you know?
Yes.
You got that part,
it's
right?
It's priced at $179.
That's not even bad.
For all six episodes.
Yes.
And $79 for each trilogy.
It will happen. It is magnificent.
The executives say...
Is it going to come in a big case with Darth Vader's head? Is it going to come in a giant... Come on. You got to do one of those. C-3PO? 3PO's head? Maybe Leia's head. And there's like the buns open, and then there's discs in it.
That would be kind of
That'd be awesome. Come on. It looked like you had a severed head on your DVD shelf, which would disturb the girls when you brought them by. But I mean, it's once you explain it to them.
Come on.
Yeah, if you got the box set of Star Wars, there's no girls coming over anyway. Maybe your mom. It would disturb your mom when she came to visit. But it's come on.
You know what they should do? They just, should make like Princess Leia's head with the buns, like, but they should have it so you can put like every day a new Danish there. You know, a Danish the Danish of the day. Are we watching Star? Yes, we have a cinnamon Danish.
It's a cinnamon glaze on today's edition.
And here's your coffee and Danish.
Do you guys remember Hardware Wars where the Cookie Monster was eating the buns?
Yeah. Parodies of Star Wars.
Or Spaceballs when she just. It's earphones.
Yeah, it's earphones. Yeah, I remember that. Anyway. That was actually funny. I laughed at that one.
At the CES show, the Consumer Electronics Show, they announced this, and they had Darth Vader on the floor to help announce this, and he said...
Whore. Vader is a whore. He shows up for every one of these, like, ribbon cuttings. He's just...
He's the cheapest one they can get.
He's disgusting.
Him and Chewbacca.
He's disgusting. I'm disgusted by him.
He says, the forces of the
Empire...
You
are a traitor. And yeah,
exactly.
Lines. Yeah.
He
buy says, my stuff. I'm your father.
Buy my stuff.
If you want me to like you, buy my DVD.
Buy my DVD.
What he said isn't as good as what you guys
purchase
said.
More. Purchase more. Purchase more. Purchase. Say something else from the movie, Vader. Purchase more. No, you didn't say that in the movie. Yes, I did. You just didn't hear me.
It's on the editing room floor. Yeah. It will be the in the new one.
You like the lights? It says purchase when it turns on.
It will be in the new director's cut.
Buy, so, consume, consume.
Yeah, if you actually, the motion detector, you walk by, he'll say, buy me when you're in the store.
buy me now. Buy me immediately. You have not bought me for the last time.
Listen to me, I'm your father.
Reminds me of a one-panel Charles Adams cartoon I once saw that sort of led off all of these things, since it was done in either the late 40s, early 50s. A woman staring fixedly at her old black and white TV set while putting on her coat without even looking at it. And on the TV set, there's a guy dressed up as an old-fashioned Mandrake the Magician type hypnotist, and he's going, you will put on your coat and pick up your purse. You will go down to your neighborhood supermarket. You will take advantage of our new offer to buy three boxes of Noodleman's noodles and only pay for two of them. You will put on your coat.
Don't laugh. They do that in the music. They put the subliminal messages
in the old days.
In the musics.
Good. Yeah. You should do it now.
Yeah.
I think they made it illegal.
It's Ovaltine. Weird because the other
drink
day...
Drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah.
You will drink your Ovaltine.
The other day I came home with 3 bottles of Gatorade, and I didn't even go shopping for that. So I don't know why I bought that, but I guess it was that Muzak.
Gatorade and lasagna. Yeah. Lasagna and Gatorade.
That's the second subliminal lasagna comment you made today.
Yeah, it wasn't subliminal. I'm hungry. Yeah. I don't want lasagna.
So speaking of more money and the search of...
Mr. Segway, the search of more money.
Last week's winning numbers, for those of you who don't know, to the 355 mega millions were 4, 8, 15, 25, 47, and the Mega Bowl was 42.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Almost
I didn't win.
Now, if you're a fan of the TV show Lost, you know that the numbers used in that show were 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, and 42. So if you play those numbers, just as many as you do, based on reports, there's over 25,000 people who played those numbers.
It's also the 4 times table.
You just won yourself a cool $150. So if you play the Lost numbers,
really?
6 years of sacrificing watching the show, you play the Lost numbers for the Mega Millions, you won $150. And the kicker is that $150 is the exact amount that'll cost for the season 6, for the whole complete season of Lost, the finale. So how about that?
Wow, that is fabulous.
What? That's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It's actually more amazing
than the show.
Yes.
With crap.
If you're a fan of the show, you played the numbers, you went on
the fan of that show, you're an
and
idiot.
And then you go and often buy the complete season of Lost.
That's idiot. That's great. Take the money that you just found in this devastated economy and go purchase the final season of a crap show.
But the show got you the $150.
And you're going to go and spend it on the show.
No,
you don't benefit. They benefit. Who benefits? They do. They walk away with the $150.
You spend that money on stupid thing like food.
Yeah, something dumb.
Gatorade.
Something dumb like that.
Something dumb like canned goods and shotguns.
Yeah.
From when the apocalypse
zombie.
Yeah.
And Gatorade.
That's a line from a film. I forget. No, it was Gremlins 2. When the brain gremlin told everybody to put their money in canned goods and shotguns.
Yes. Yes. I remember that. All right, moving along.
Moving along.
I'm
trying.
David Tennant, who played the lead in Doctor Who for 5 years, married actress Georgia Moffett, who played Jenny, the doctor's sort of daughter in the episode The Doctor's Daughter.
Sort of daughter.
Yeah, I didn't see the episode, but that's
neither did I.
What it said. I think she played her father or something like that. But they were related. They were related
in the show.
Yes, in the show they're related.
Now they're related.
Well, and he left the show. He's not the doctor anymore.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay. Because I used to watch him.
He's the nurse.
That's true. He is probably the nerd. Maybe the surgeon. Some of his run was on the Sci-Fi Channel for a long time. And now that he's not there, the Sci-Fi Channel is just mysteriously not showing the Doctor Who anymore.
But
the
bonus thing about it is that Georgia Moffett, who is the actress who played his daughter in the show, happens to be the 5th Doctor's, Peter Davison's, real-life daughter.
Wow.
So it's kind of like all in the family.
It's all incestuous.
Yeah, all incestuous.
Wow.
It's all incestuous.
If I really think about this, my head will explode.
Don't think about it.
I won't.
There's no need to.
I know that Tom Baker married one of the companions, but the marriage didn't work out.
Really? Which one? Which of the companions?
Truthfully, I don't really remember.
Because he had...
He had
several, actually.
Yeah, I think it was the last one. The one who was also a Time Lord or Time Lady.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Yeah, Perrin, that was the name of the character.
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, and there were two of them, and he married the second one.
Oh.
Well, you know, the Time Lords regenerate, and apparently they decided to have the character regenerate. Probably a labor dispute behind the scenes.
You know, I'm going to start calling this a no follow-up question news. You can't ask follow-up questions.
Oh, well, what am I supposed to do while you're reading the news?
I
didn't bring any news.
Oh.
I could text people.
Mark's
reading the news right now.
Hey, Mark, is there a follow-up question to that?
That's a lovely picture of a swan over your head there, Mark.
Moving along. New Line Cinema.
I think it's a seagull.
Finally got around to signing Ian McKellen to return as Wizard Gandalf in The Hobbit. Elijah Wood has already signed to return as Frodo, as well as Cate Blanchett, who will play...
Which is odd, because none of them are in the book.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a search moment.
Search for more cashish.
And Orlando Bloom has an offer on the table, but it's too early to tell if a deal will be made.
He should just take it. Come on.
The search
that would
for
do him a lot
money.
Of good. He hasn't been in a movie in, like, in a couple of years.
Orlando Bloom.
Since the last Pirates movie.
Yeah, they're making a new one now.
So he's not in it.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
That's the one good thing about it. Keira Knightley.
Not
in it. And
really?
They were the worst characters in the other three movies, in my opinion.
Really?
Yes. I dislike them.
Oh, I don't know. Keira Knightley turned me on.
Well,
but, of course, you know, a woman with a sword using it capably. What's not to like?
There's a complete difference between being turned on by the appearance of a woman and being turned on by her constantly nagging voice that's going on and on. And her actions, which is, in which case, in the three films, she and Orlando Bloom were the ones that messed over the pirates more than the pirates did. They were more treacherous than the pirates. They were very, and they.
I think that was supposed to be an ironic point.
Well, it was annoying because if you're a fan of the pirates, you don't like to see them.
If you're a fan of the ride, you don't.
Stop trying to mess the ride up.
Okay.
Stupid protagonist.
That actually reminds me of what we were mentioning before about the changing history, that they changed the pirate ride, if you remember. We mentioned that on the news.
It's not the same as changing
how
the book.
That they're, instead of calling them wenches, they call them, you know, something else. And instead of them with them chasing around, they're carrying food now on the ride, so they're trying to make it more...
You know what? I believe in political correctness. I do. I know a lot of people have a problem with that, people associated with affirmative action and a lot of things like that, and people think it's not fair and that their language is curtailed or whatever. We have a gigantic country full of many, many different styles of people. It's very easy to insult people and to easily not be sensitive to their feelings or their beliefs or whatever. That is one argument. When you're talking about the past, when you're talking about the way we used to talk versus the way we talk now, I don't think it's correct or logical to change that language, and to change the attitudes that people used to have, because it negates the progress that we've made in sociology, in just plain respect that we've learned appreciation for various cultures and whatnot. So when you go back to when it comes down to something like changing the ride at Disneyland, that's
not
stupid.
The same thing.
Yeah. Although on the other hand, that's kids, and then kids are going to hear that language and feel that it's all right for them to come out and start calling girls wenches and stuff like that. So a lot of kids are going to get slapped in the
face. Bring my lunch, wench.
Yeah,
hey, Mom.
That's not a good idea. I tried that once with my mom, and they'd, wow. That was.
You want lunch? Here's a ham sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be like the whole Scarface. Hey, kids, come over here. Want to see that guy get slapped in the face? Well, he's going to call that girl a wench. Wench. Look at that. Look at that.
Do it again. Do it again. Yeah. I like that.
Well, my personal hypothesis about the rise of political correctness has to do with... back during the 1960s, there was a movement which did have a lot of good things about it. It was called the Free Speech Movement. It's one of the ones that's largely forgotten about now. But because of that, you were not allowed to have comics like the late, great George Carlin and so forth. But one of the not-so-good things about it was that they tore down what was commonly known as manners and courtesy because they said it was somehow phony. And they said everyone would get along better if everyone heard the exact truth of what you really thought about them and so forth. Well, that didn't quite work out so well. But no. The problem was is by the time it sort of penetrated the mass consciousness, the old manners and etiquette and courtesies that had used to be what kept us from choking each other had already gone by the wayside, and something else had to be invented to take its place. And what they wound up inventing was political correctness. And one last observation, I've noticed that just about everyone thinks that political correctness when applied to anyone else is ridiculous, but somehow your group is different.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. Well, nobody knows how to act. Because people hear words and they figure, okay, you can't just hear a word. You can't just be insulted by someone. Someone comes up to you in the middle of the street and says, you're a jerk, you know, without answering that. That starts. That's how it starts. If you don't have anything clever to say, you're going to use your fists. So that's it. So it escalates. And a lot of people cannot take being criticized. A lot of people just can't stand it. So that's why we have to kind of curtail that because of the immaturity of most people out there.
And yet on the same level, people love criticizing.
No, of course. Isn't that, of course. I know several people who can dish it out but cannot take it.
And that guy's a jerk. That guy's a jerk. You know, I'm not a jerk.
Whatever, you know. Whatever people call me, I agree with them. It stops them dead in their tracks.
Yeah, just shut them
really,
down.
Really? You're a jerk. Oh, you know
no,
me.
No, you don't know the half of it.
Yeah.
A jerk. Is that all?
But then when they
I'm
come
sure
around,
more than that.
But then when they come around to Chuck, bam, that's it for him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's like you hear the thing snap. You Chuck, click. That's it.
It's sort of like right after I forget whether it was the First or Second World War, someone wrote a novel called The Good Soldier, Shrivenik, was about a corporal or a private in the Austrian-Hungarian army. And the way he survived with all these snotty aristocratic officers was, like you said, simply agreeing with everything they said about him. Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely correct. I am a dump cough. I am perhaps the worst dump cough that ever lived. And it's just would knock the wind out of their sails.
And they just stop. It's like we're, well, San's in security now. I'm in security. And what you learn is do not escalate.
No.
Do not take it personal. Do whatever. So I don't. And I agree with them. And it's like, well, yeah. And they leave. And that's fine.
Yeah, especially since these days you never know when you're going to be facing some lunatic with a gun or a knife in his pocket.
Everyone but me.
Goofy short circuits will suddenly start using it.
I'm convinced everyone but me has a gun.
No, I don't
know. You shouldn't publicize that information.
That's true. I'm getting a gun. As soon as the show's over. I think I can get one at the gas station down the street.
The creepy gas station?
Yeah, the creepy gas station.
Yeah,
not the brightly lit one, the creepy one.
Well, you got to go to that one because that's a more exciting gas station.
When you go into a gas station, they have a little general store corner. It is one of those girls in the grass skirts dancing.
Yeah.
Right next to that, they got a Glock.
Yeah. So it's like, do I want to... Do I want a bobblehead or a semi-automatic?
Yeah.
decisions.
Well, speaking of guns.
Mr. Segwind.
Finally, the new management at MGM, along with James Bond people.
Megum.
MGM.
Oh.
I was like, those are the James Bond people? They announced that the 23rd Bond film will arrive in theaters November 9th,
in
2012. They're actually got
be
it together.
In 3D?
No, it's not going to be in 3D, according to this. At least not yet.
And is Kate Winslet's ex-husband going to be directing
Sam Mendes?
Whoever?
In 2 years, no one's going to remember 3D. The 3D phenomenon, I believe. Yeah. 3D's already fading now.
It's starting to.
Do we know who will be James Bond?
Daniel Craig is set to return, and Sam Mendes, who directed American Beauty and wrote Perdition, is directing.
Oh. Did I have a name yet for the film?
Not yet. No, not yet.
Okay, so I gather they just junked the last script.
Yeah, there's a brand new whole deal with this one. Hopefully.
Oh, really? The script that they had, that they were
everything that
on
they
the
were holding
pad.
On to, they just. Out the door, you know,
well,
start all over.
Why?
Probably had to for legal reasons. Otherwise, they'd have to pay a lot of people a lot of money that they didn't want to pay.
As long as there's another film.
I mean, they've been waiting around for a while to make this movie, and then why in the world are they going to
waste
more money on
that? And I hope it's following the Daniel Craig James Bond.
Well, he's in it, so hopefully it'll be.
It's like a serious.
But they'll introduce probably Moneypenny in this one, and maybe Q, and. Some of the other staples that's what they talked about that they were going to do as the movies progressed onward.
Incidentally, a little bit of trivia for you. You know, in the original books, there was no character Q.
Really?
There was a Q department, which is where all Bond's gadgets came from, but there was no single Q. Occasionally, Ian Fleming would talk about the earnest young men in the Q department who were always bothering Bond by asking him a lot of questions he didn't feel like answering. But the closest that came to a character, the closest Ian Fleming came to a character like Q was Major Bothroyd, who was supposed to be the service armorer and spent his life happily testing out pistols and giving them out.
Maybe there won't
be
a
work?
Yeah. Maybe there won't be a Q at all then.
Well, we shall see. But November 9th, 2012. Set your dates.
Well, in the When was John Cleese? What was the last one John Cleese was in?
He was in Die Another Day.
Right. He was the last
Pierce Brosnan one.
He wasn't Q, but he was his understudy or something like that.
Right. Then he moved into the role in the next film after that.
Right.
Which is strangely, prophetically convenient that the original Q said he was retiring, and then he unfortunately died. And so they were just, story narrative, they just slid the... you know, you just assumed that he retired, and they slid the other guy into the role.
Yeah, and the last scene that I think his name was Ian McClellan that played the original Q. The last scene he was in was, he said, "Of all the things I've ever taught you, Bond, remember this one. Always have a way out." And he just fell through a trap door.
And that was the last time you ever saw him.
That's the last time.
Very, very profound. Yeah. So we are ready for our break.
You got it.
We'll be right back with Game Fun Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Funny to see two moons in the sky, isn't it? Funny how quick a guy gets used to it. Yeah. Joe.
What?
Did you hear something?
Like what?
Like a sort of big breathing.
No.
It's funny. I did.
Technicians have ridden in this little vehicle. But now, Demoivius, prepare your minds for a new scale of physical scientific values, gentlemen. Twenty miles. Listen. Circuits opening and closing, and they never rest. This is one of their ventilator shafts. You can feel the warm air rising. Look down here. Look down, gentlemen. Are you afraid? 7,800 levels. And 400 other shafts, like this one. Yes, a single machine, hewn 20 miles on each side. For 2,000 centuries, it has waited patiently here, tuning and lubricating itself, replacing worn parts. I have reason to believe that 16 years ago, a minor alteration was performed throughout the entire 8,000 cubic miles of its own fabric.
But what's it all for?
Sometimes the gauges register a little when the buck deer fight in the autumn or when the birds fly over in the spring. And nearly a whole dial became active when your ship first approached from deep space. I'll show you a section of one of the power units. These units are sunk in the body of the planet, 50 miles right below our feet. Now, be sure and look only in the mirror. Man does not behold the face of the Gorgon and live. Thermonuclear reactors in tandem. The harnessed power of an exploding planetary system.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to Wicked Infinite Radio. This is your host, Mark Toro, speaking along with Hassan Godwin.
Stand by for action. That's my favorite. I want them to play that before they wheel me in at my funeral. Stand by for action.
That's terrible.
Just wheel me.
Anything can happen in the next half hour.
Exactly.
And you come out,
suckers.
The start of the zombie apocalypse right there.
Proof positive, no one will ever will come to my real funeral after I pull that. That's a surefire way to just ensure that everyone who was my friend is no longer my friend.
Or they come to the next one and go, when's he getting up?
Yeah. Or they set the coffin on fire to make sure he's not getting up this time. I don't care how.
He should be up by now. What's going on? This is the worst funeral ever.
It's like, here's a knife. Go stick it.
So this week we've talked about every single aspect of a movie except for what we're going to talk about this week. This week we're going to be talking about the beginning, the introduction of a movie. When I was a kid, and actually I still say till recent years, you know, I always have to, if I'm going to see a movie, I have to see it from the very beginning. I can't miss any little bit, a minute or 2 minutes. It takes me out of watching the movie. However, I've come to realize in many years that while watching horror movies, some of them, you don't even need to watch the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie because it's just like, it's I don't need to pay attention. It's like, all right,
horror movies are terrible anyway. Horror movies are horrible. So, I mean, there's no, in the old days, you used to get like significant information at the start of each film about characters and whatnot. And then they used to hopefully form some kind of, like, attachment to them and then watch them get killed, which was the horrific part of the horror movie. But now it's just like, oh, he's dead. Oh, here's the jerk. He's the template jerk.
Yeah.
And he's dead. And, there's a newlywed couple. They're dead. As soon as they start having sex, they're out of here.
So actually, I was telling Charlie over the break about how I thought that Star Wars was a big deal because it had the different introduction that it had just the words. This is what's going on. This is what's happening. Let's get right into it. And what did you say about that?
I said that, as Tom said, Lucas was a big fan of the old-time serials in the movie theater, and he fashioned that whole beginning for that, or, you know, just like that.
So
as his you know,
tip of the hat?
Tip of the hat to the old-fashioned serials.
So is that a significant part to you guys, to when you come in to watch a movie, the beginning, well, science fiction mostly, horror and that type of thing, is that more important that you can come in, I got to see everything that's going on, the credits, and then...
Well, my favorite movies always have the beginning at the start of them.
Well, no, look at Memento. Memento is a perfect example. How Memento, the beginning wasn't actually the beginning, it was the end.
I hated that.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm starting to hate, because it was good the first time I saw it, but when they start the beginning, when everybody drops dead and then they go 3 hours before.
Yeah, three hours.
Yeah, another thing. Like, you know,
the Pulp Fiction thing. They did that the best with Pulp Fiction. They've never really been able to do it better than that.
Yeah.
And they should just stop, because it's just a gimmick.
Yeah.
And then gimmicks are bad.
It's like, and they beat a dead horse with it. Once it goes over well the first time,
right?
Let's beat that dead horse.
Well, that's the American way. That's what they've been doing for years. Anything works, there's going to be 30
other. Yeah, but it only works once or twice. It doesn't work 50 million times, then you get annoyed at it.
And then somebody decides to try something different.
Are you talking about like the introduction, action or aspect of whatever happens at the credits, or just the opening sequences of the film?
The opening sequences, when you come in to see a movie, the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie where they're supposed to have all the establishing characters, all the stuff that, you know, maybe sometimes they're going to have a little hidden gem that in the beginning of the movie is going to be used later on.
Hmm.
But I find, like I said, nowadays, at least specifically speaking for horror movies, you really don't even need those first 10, 15 minutes of a movie at all. You just come in and sit there, all right, I don't need to be paying attention to any of the stuff. When's the guy going to start getting killed? When is this going to happen? As the past 5, 6 horror movies, I've noticed that nothing happens. Like, there's no point to having this ending even in the movie.
We said this once before. I think when you go on to a foreign station on your TV, like a Spanish station or whatever, and you go on there and there's a horror movie, you just could shut the sound off if you're not going to understand it anyway. But you know the movie. You know what's coming. It's the same setup.
In a way, it's a very old-fashioned way of doing a movie, because at one time, back in like the 30s, in the very early days of the movies, even going back to The Silence, one time they did not print movie schedules in the newspaper. What they did is they had what they called continuous showings. And what you were expected to do was just walk in whenever it was convenient for you to walk in, sit down in the middle of the film, watch it, and then sit through until it played again, and then saw it from the beginning. And then that's where we got the saying, isn't this where we came in? You left at the part where you came in.
Me and Herman used to do that all the time, like at the casino, because
really? It
was like the right after that they start again. So if we got there late, we just stay until this is where we came in.
I mean, I remember I saw...
And then we left.
And sat there watching the same movie over and over and over again, but I always had to see it from the beginning. Inception was a great example of how a beginning is very crucial to the type of movie. You know, it has every single thing. You had to pay attention to the whole thing. I mean, is that a lost art now, that we're in a point where most movies don't even need a beginning? You just want to just get right to the action, just forget about character development?
It just depends. I think when you get a good beginning in a movie, it's more indicative of the fact that you're in good hands, you know, with the director. That, you know, you get a great beginning, and you're like, okay, this person understands that we need to be introduced to the world that he's putting together around us, and that, you know, apparently certain things are going to happen where all this information is going to be crucial, or he's trying to set a tone or a pace that we're going to need to be accustomed to before things start off. So I think it's more a sign of the fact that you're probably about to watch a quality movie, as opposed to just another, you know, just a your average, you know.
Having spoken introductions or written ones on screen is also an old technique. I mean, even one of the greatest movies of all time, Casablanca, had a spoken introduction where the unseen narrator describes how the refugee route from Eastern Europe through Central Europe to the Mediterranean and across the Mediterranean and finally wound up in Casablanca. The refugees had to take it because they couldn't get to the New World directly. And I remember any number of movies from that period where the most blatant was one about, oddly enough, John Lafitte, where they actually had a college professor come on in the first 5 minutes and explain the political situation that made the situation that was going on possible. And truthfully, it worked. Just one other thing I'd like to comment on is this thing about where they mix up the parts of the film. I think that actually goes back to a science fiction short story. I wish I could remember the name. I don't. But it, the way it begins is, this is the way the story ends. And it sounds like a glorious, happy ending. Then they say, this is the middle of the story. And they, and again, it seems like it's progressing on to this glorious, happy ending at the end of the story, which you've already written. But then at the end of it, says, this is the way the story begins. And what you find is that reality is yanked out from underneath you, and that all your presuppositions were entirely wrong. And in reality, what's been happening is a terrible, terrible tragedy, because the situation is just not what you thought it was. And I think this story, it was by one of the greats of the so-called Golden Age, I think it caught the eye of a lot of people, and they've been trying to imitate it ever since.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. That's very profound. We've mentioned a couple of times that an ending can make or break a movie, but how important is the beginning? Do you think a beginning can make or break a movie as well?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite beginnings of ever favorite beginning is Rocky II. It begins at the exactly at the end of the other movie, which is which I loved, because it was like, this is the second Rocky. This is, you know, they didn't go into, oh, it was a year since that fight. It was right after the fight in the ambulance in the hospital room, it starts from there.
They did that with
Halloween 2. They did that with
Halloween 2. They did that with Back to the Future. Part two.
They
changed an actress.
They had to.
But still, they did that with the Quantum of Solace. It was not exactly right after, but you're meant to believe it's like 5 to 10 minutes after the events at the end of the first film. I don't know. The beginning of movies is very important. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I know I just said it does, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the movie is good. It's just that you're going to give the beginning of a movie a lot of leeway if you've already settled in to see the film. Right. So if it starts off, some movies that are fantastic start off extremely slow, you know, and you're like, but then when it picked up, you're like, oh my God, you know, and then you almost appreciate the slowness of the way it kind of built up to it. There are some movies like, one of my favorite openings to a movie is Blade, which was, it just started moving and it never slowed down. The movie continued at that pace from beginning to end. It started with a gigantic action sequence, you know, but it was proper sequential storytelling. It was introduced you to the world and the underground-ness of the scene that we were going to walk into. Introduced it started out with the villains, you know, in spotty introductions, and then the hero came in, killed all the villains, and then you go, oh, okay, so these guys are bad. That guy's a good guy. This guy's a victim, and, you know, he saved the victim. The hero doesn't kill the victim, thus explaining that the hero is the hero in the first place, and then we move on. Another fantastic introduction to a movie that's not that great. So this is this goes from my example. It might not be great. The theatrical introduction to Miami Vice is actually one of my favorite opening sequences of any movie that I've ever seen.
I've never seen that.
It starts out in a nightclub. It starts out with like heavy music. I think it's Jay-Z, and it starts out with this girl dancing. Then it kind of a quick pullback, and you see Sonny's face, and you see Tubbs' face, and then it kind of pulls back again, and you see the cops all together just hanging out, just kind of waiting for something to happen. And so it's like established, okay, here's the two principal heroes, these are the good guys, you know, and then it kind of, after a few minutes, it goes into some of the rigmarole that you need to roll a movie out. But it's just a fantastic, here we are, you know, you were here, you were watching them here, you've just joined them, but they've been at this for a long time, and these are the guys you're going to focus on, and these are the guys that, you know, I mean, and as the story goes on, you start to, they establish the antagonist later.
Right.
So you know exactly who to follow, who to focus on when the film really kicks into high gear. So it's one of my favorites, and the movie's really, story wise, is not that great. Sequentially, it's fantastic. There's visually the directing is visually beautiful, but it's not really a great film writing wise.
I only saw the ending of Miami Vice, and I was there's like a shootout at the end,
mm-hmm.
and it was
as there are usually with Michael Mann films.
The weirdest thing about that movie, I thought, was that I'm sitting there and I'm seeing this glorious shootout that's really going on, and I'm like, this is the boringest shootout I've ever seen. I just couldn't understand why I was not into the action. I was like,
well, you have to see the whole film.
I'm guessing so, but you can go into any action scene. You can see, like, oh, stuff's happening, stuff's blowing up. Oh, this is
exciting.
Then, I was
Michael,
like,
to defend it slightly.
It was supposed to be realistic.
Yeah, that was his take on what a real gun battle is.
Yeah,
and the real tactics that go into actually winning a gun battle. Because
right.
your hero's standing behind one car, shooting, and managing to hit the bad guys, even though the bad guys are shooting and they can't hit anything, is in his opinion, ridiculous.
Well, it was very realistic. It took me back to say, hey, I guess this is why this is not glamorous or anything. It's just a shootout.
Yeah, but I mean, the shootout wasn't the point of the film.
Well,
the shootout is just the consequences of the actions that took place in the film.
I just walked into that, and that was...
Yeah, you can't do that, though.
I took away from... Yeah, I gotta see it from the beginning.
Yeah, you should see a whole film, especially if you work in a movie theater. You should have no excuse.
What about beginnings that have nothing to do with the movie?
Uh-huh. You mean like the Resident Evil beginning that we saw?
Because
that was just to resolve the
end of the last one.
And then after that, they just shifted gears, and I thought that if they had kept along that line with the beginning, the movie would have been a good movie. And then when they shifted, it was terrible.
One of the greatest examples of beginnings that had nothing to do with the movies was the James Bond sequence.
They
always had a beginning,
Classic.
Then they changed it with the Spy Who Loved Me, because the beginning was him being chased by the skiers,
right.
and then he shot Barbara Bach's boyfriend, and you see them in bed before he has to go get James Bond. So, but that was the only time where they went against their rule. But other than that, every James Bond movie started with that great action scene that had nothing to do with the movie.
Well, I guess.
But it had to do with going right into the introduction.
Well, on the same lines, I would think the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, when I went to see it, I heard about this beginning. My sister went to see it. She was telling me, all she could talk about was this beginning.
Right.
My brother went to see it. All he could talk about was this beginning. And I went to see it. I was expecting it, and it was exactly what it was delivered. It just went right into it. So I thought it was a very important aspect of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, two very problematic beginnings. A movie that's generally considered one of the best war movies. It's called Hell Is for Heroes, which has really a terrible beginning. It sounds like it's, I won't even describe, just the thing of the most stereotyped group about to go to battle begins you've ever seen, you know, with like a thumbnail capsule of everybody, you know, and there's the kid from Brooklyn and yada, yada, yada. It's awful. But then as the movie slowly moves along and they get up to the line and events start happening, most of which are not stereotyped, it just gets better and better and faster until finally at the end you're practically bouncing off your seat and you realize it is one of the great war movies despite the fact that it had such a rotten beginning.
Rotten beginning.
And the other problematic beginning I'd like to bring up, I don't know, some people might think this was brilliant, but I always thought it was stupid. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid starts out with the silent film of the Wild Bunch, which is okay, since that gives a sort of a historical anchoring. But then after that, for like the first 10, 15 minutes of the film, it's all shot in extreme close-up of people's faces in sepia.
Yeah.
And you get absolutely no momentum from it at all. And it doesn't open up until that one scene where Butch and Sundance are riding back to the hole-in-the-wall game, gang, and you suddenly see the whole hole in the wall area in a panorama. But up until then, it had no momentum at all. It was just one face talking to another face.
It's almost like I would have I almost gave up on it. I would have given up on it if I didn't know it was a classic.
Right.
You know, so I mean, times were different. You know, so people weren't expecting the same thing that we're expecting when we go to see movies.
So do you think the current trend would be that the slow beginning is no current?
Look, they're one of the another great beginning, if you're talking about a movie, is Ginger Snaps. All right, not a great movie, but one of my favorites. Okay, and it starts out with this, you know, these two kind of outcasts. And it seems like it's, you know, if you don't know anything about the movie, it seems like it's just going to lead into this kind of almost like Columbine situation where, right. you know, and then one of them gets attacked by a werewolf, you know, it's just out of nowhere with no warning. And then it turns into a, you know, a werewolf movie.
Right.
And well. it's a great opening, though, you know, because it hints to nothing right. that is actually coming. So, I mean, I don't know. I think the beginnings are important, but. You can't lock it down because the beginnings are probably the most liberal thing about a movie. You okay. know, it's the least amount of
right.
There's the least amount of rigidness in the beginning of anything.
And there's no rules about the beginning. The beginning could be the end.
No,
you know, of the movie, and it's like the beginning, like Dusk Till Dawn. You think that's a whole? That's a whole different movie.
Almost what made me hate that film.
Think it's a whole different.
I was interested in the movie that they were hidden yeah, to, and then when they walk into the club, I'm like,
I was like,
Assault on Precinct 13.
I wanted to see if they got away, if they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess that qualifies for our final thoughts because we're almost out of time.
Right.
And my final thought would be, I guess one of the biggest openings I would be RoboCop because it didn't even have an opening title sequence or anything and they just went right into the movie until the very end and you actually saw what movie you were watching. So if you didn't know, it was an interesting experience to see.
That's true.
If I mention this every week, if you missed any part of the show, you can go online www.itcamefromradio.com. Where all archives will be up within a week. And I guess that's about us for this week. We will see you next week.
Yay.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.